I've shared my nerd tendencies with you guys at times. I gotta geek out just a little bit here if I can. I think I may have found a new favorite tie. This is segments from the Rosetta Stone. Familiar with that? They found it in Egypt, and it's one of the main ways that we know a lot of translation of hieroglyphics, because they found a decree written in three different languages, hieroglyphics and Demotic and Greek, and so scholars learned a lot. And I was working on Egypt stuff this week, and I came across this, and I geeked out a little bit, so there you go. That's not what I came here to tell you. Scale is a tricky thing. We had some family in from Texas last week, and she's telling us a story, and we were talking about how big Texas is. And she said she had somebody in from North Dakota. And they were traveling a few different places in Texas and telling them their itinerary. And said, oh, we're going from here to here this day. And, okay, that'll be a nice drive. And then we're going from here to here. I think it was Corpus Christi to Lubbock. And said, oh, well, you wanna get up early? That's about a 10-hour drive. I said, no, that can't be right. No, she pulled out her little pocket atlas, a little one page for Texas. I said, oh, it's about that far. And I can go that far in North Dakota in 2 or 3 hours. And she said, you're not in North Dakota anymore. You're in Texas. Scale can sometimes trip us up. Right? Sometimes scale can tell the wrong story. You know, having young kids, I get to see a lot of the kids' shows that are out there, and there's a good nerdy math show that's on PBS now called Odd Squad. I don't know if anybody's come across Odd Squad. You should. But they fight crimes using math, as you do. And the one of their villains that they introduced was named Odd Todd. And Odd Todd used math in evil ways. Things like, one of the first things he did is he had graphs that seemed true, but the scales were off. You know, so he's able to convince people, but they, you know, the Odd Squad, they came and they showed, no, look, this symbol represents 10. It makes it look like it's 1, and, you know, that sort of thing. But you see that in advertising. You see that, politicians, they'll show you a chart. Look, here's two things, one much bigger, one's much smaller. This one has gone down just a little, and this one goes up just a little. So they put the chart up there, say, see? And that's a big problem. No, it's a scale problem. And time scales in funny ways, too. Wouldn't you agree? Ever feel like time is speeding up as you age? Kids think that a year takes forever. You know, Marcus will say, when am I going to get to be 5? I have been 4 forever. You ever feel that way about your birthdays? We almost had a second anniversary in a month's time, and that probably didn't feel too far off, right? With the way time just seems to speed up. One idea is why it feels so different for kids and that it does adults. As they say, maybe it's a percentage of your life issue. You know, for Marcus, 1 year is a quarter of all time that he's experienced. It's a smaller percentage for many in this room, right? So it doesn't seem so long. Time scales in funny ways, but we only have our own context to work within. Kids only have their own context to work within on that. And you know, as parents and grandparents and mentors, we try to give perspective to them. We try to lay it out and show them how time works and some of the ways that they may be misunderstanding. But unfortunately, our perspective can only function within our contexts as well. And you know, if something occurs outside of the span of our life, it seems unfair. Right? Talk to a Cubs fan before last year. You know, you hear, you know, the worst thing that I can think of is to be born and live a full life and die without seeing Cubs win a World Series. Or the Red Sox fan said the same thing about a decade earlier. Myself being born in 1984, I wonder if sometime down the line, doing some story about the long-suffering Tigers fans, if I might be a bookend interview or something like that. You know, we think things need to happen within our lifetimes, and if it doesn't, that's somehow unfair. But if we're honest about it, if we think about it, our lifespans are really only a breath in the grand scale of things, right? The grand scale belongs to God. And God is in control even if we can't understand it, even if we can't wrap our minds around that scale, even if we're only working with a North Dakota map and God's got a map of Texas, right? We're trying to wrap our minds around that, even if it doesn't fit in our own time. Now, this week in Bible classes, we looked at one of these time scale situations. We looked at two bookend narratives around a big gap in time. First was Genesis 46, when God tells Jacob to take his family down to Egypt. And then Exodus 3, God tells Moses he's going to bring those same people out. And in between is about 430 years. It's a lot of lifespans. It's a lot of generations. God told Jacob that he was sending his family down to Egypt so that he would bring them back out again. He says it right there. You're going to go down there and then I will bring you back out. And so they went and they waited and waited and waited 430 years. How many generations were born and died without seeing any sign of that deliverance? We don't even have a record of God speaking to anybody in between Jacob in Genesis 46 and Moses in Exodus 3. And on Wednesday, in our class, somebody took that a little bit further and said, look in Exodus 2:24. It said, God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. And I was concerned, I skipped a line in my notes. Before somebody pointed that out, they said, why did God take so long? What was different? What finally occurred at the time of Moses that made God take action? And then somebody said, God remembered the covenant. And asked the question, if God remembered, does that mean that God had forgotten? The idea of God remembering his people on the surface of it doesn't feel all that comfortable, especially in the setting of all those years of waiting. It sounds a little bit like when a parent sends a kid to the corner and says, I will tell you when you can get out of the corner. Don't ask, because if you ask, it's going to be longer. I'll let you know. And the parent gets to doing something and remembers, oh yeah, you can get out of the corner now. Good job. And I don't know if any of you have ever done that. Me neither. That's kind of the feel that it has. Go down to Egypt, and I will bring you out, and you will become a great nation there. And then down the line, God remembers his covenant and goes to save his people. And that situation doesn't sound much like this is an appropriate sermon title. It doesn't sound like, well, if that isn't love. It doesn't sound like love. It sounds like, I don't know. It sounds a little troubling, the idea of God having to remember. But we say a lot of times we make mistakes when we try to cast our own experiences on God. Right? Say God made humans in his own image, and unfortunately humans returned the favor. And we think of God in our own limited terms. And God remembering is not the same thing as somebody remembering to let Calvin out of the corner. If you look at the times in the Bible where it says God remembered, it's very clearly not a situation where God has forgotten. In Genesis 8, when Noah and family and animals were on the ark, the beginning of chapter 8, it says God remembered Noah and the waters subsided. That was not a situation of, oh, right, the boat. God had not forgotten Noah. In Genesis 30, it says God remembered Rachel and opened her womb. It said the same thing in 1 Samuel 1 with Hannah. God remembered Hannah. In Judges, when Samson, making his final stand, remember his eyes had been gouged out and they put him up against the pillar. He says, God, remember me so that I can deliver people and die with the Philistines. He was not saying, God, do you remember? He said, God, cause something to happen here, because that's what happens when God remembers. It is not the opposite of God forgetting. It is God taking action for his people. God remembered Noah. The flood went away. God remembered Rachel and Hannah. Something physically impossible happened. God remembered Samson. A building fell down. God remembered his covenant when he heard the Israelites cry out. And he did something incredible through his servant Moses. Something that would change the relationship with his people, change the identity with his people, change world history, because God remembered. God does not forget his people. God is with his people always. Look again at what he says to Jacob and to Moses. I put these texts in the bulletin as well. When he tells Jacob to go to Egypt, in verse 3,
He said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you into a great nation there. I will go down to Egypt with you, and I will surely bring you back again. Go, I'm coming with you. And again, in Exodus 3, talking to Moses,
I'm going to consult the bulletin because I'm slow on finding a verse.
In verse 11, it says, Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. In all of that time, God was with his people, just like he said he would. He says, I'll be with you, and I will remember, and God will not fail to act. It just might not be on our timetable. Look at Jacob. 430 years. Numerous generations. God said, I'm going to do something incredible with your family. Jacob didn't get to see it. His kids didn't get to see it. His grandkids didn't get to see it. So many generations saw nothing of this promise. That does not mean God was not with them. God was working on a scale that they couldn't imagine. God was working on their behalf. God had timing that they didn't realize. He was waiting, perhaps, for them to grow into that nation that he had told Jacob they would be. Perhaps waiting for somebody like Moses would be capable of leading. Perhaps waiting for particular Pharaoh. I don't know what the wait was. I don't work on that scale either. But God was in control. And God was there. There are times that we know God is there. Those are cool times, aren't they? Mountaintop experiences, we sometimes call them. Times where we feel that presence and we feel his love. And there are times that we don't feel that closeness, but God is still there. It's hard for us to wrap our minds around. I've said this a few times. Probably too many times already this morning. Wrap it up, right? But we have a God that can take a period of centuries and craft it to work for the benefit of his people. We have a God that even in a time greater than our lifespan, or multiple lifespans, is working. You know, often a parent will say to a child, I've been praying for you since before you were born. I've been praying for your life choices. I've been praying for your future mate, for your children, right? Sometimes parents will try to express their love for children by saying, of all of the ways that they have been dreaming and working toward what they see for their kids, even before the kids can
exist, even before their kids have anything to do with it. Think of how much bigger this is with God. God is weaving this story from the beginning until now, and it continues. You say somebody really cares about someone else, they'll move heaven and earth. We have a God who created heaven and earth, shaped it, filled it, who left heaven to come to earth. God who redeems heaven and earth. If that isn't love, I don't know what is. In the times that we most wonder where God is, it's often out of those times where we see the greatest love from God. 430 years or so, the people wondered, and then God remembered and did something amazing. It's incredible how often the times where God's people have to wait the longest are the times that God does something most amazing. You know, I suppose it can be said that God's people frequently are people in wait. You read through the Bible, you see waiting for deliverance in Egypt. You see waiting for deliverance in exile. You see waiting for the promised Messiah. We're still waiting, right? In some ways, waiting ties together all of God's people throughout history better than most ways. Today and the next 2 weeks, we're going to look at this idea of what God has done coming out of these waits. So today we looked at the time in Egypt. Next week, we're going to look at that time in between the prophets and the arrival of Jesus. And 2 weeks from now, we're going to talk about the wait that we're still doing. The ways that we try our best to understand what God is doing. The ways that we study and pray and try to work out the things that we ought to be doing and try to figure out what God is doing on whatever scale we can comprehend, while recognizing that we have a God that loves us so much, who works on this scale that is so much bigger. That's our God. That's what we are called to do, even in those times that God seems distant. I think that we're going to find we have a lot in common with God's people. So, this morning, if you need prayers, if you're saying, you're talking about times when God feels distant, you're talking about times where I'm just fed up with the wait, and you need to come and ask for prayers, and let us hold you up, let's do that. If you have been waiting, if you have heard the message and you've been waiting to respond, it's a good time to end that wait right now. We'll open up the baptistry and celebrate with you today. If there's anything you need this morning, please let us be there with you. For now, we'll stand and sing.
There's a fountain free, 'tis for you and me. Let us